Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So today we're going to talk quite a bit about Milan's decision to not do the Ragnić revolution and stick with Pioli. We'll talk a little bit about some Scudetto regrets based on Juve going out of their way not to clinch the title. We are going to talk a little bit about some recent transfer news, including Boga, Milan, and Zaniolo. Thousand Names is back to make some predictions for games over the weekend. We, of course, have a special part of the podcast for our patrons. And we're going to close the show with an interview available to all. I chatted with our friend Pete Acquaviva about Milan's decision to stick with Pioli that I think you will enjoy. So I'm joined by our friend, producer, co-host, Alex Goldberg. So let's start here, Alex. Obviously, Milan have been red hot since Calcio came back. Everything was pointing to Ragnić, but they decide to stick with Pioli. So let me ask you, do you agree with this decision to stick with the hot hand based on what we saw in the past 6 weeks or so?
Absolutely. No doubt about it. Because with Milan is you need some stability. Like, that's my thing is when I look at it from, I like that I'm less involved on this and I can look at this so basic because Milan, they're not the Milan that we all were used to, but they do have good enough players where they should be better. They should be consistent. And they have this nice form now. And they, once again, do have, we've talked about it a lot. I'll pat ourselves on the back a little bit. Not to say others didn't say it, but right when Zlatan was even rumored to go to Milan, we both talked about the vibe he would bring just to the club and being there, and that certainly has helped. And I know that's not a long-term thing, but still, they need a little stability. They need a little bit of steadying the ship and even just taking a small step in the right direction. And if things are working currently under Pioli, well, you're then overfixing something, in my opinion, to change the manager. I really think you are. And you just sometimes do need to take a couple steps back or take a couple punches in order to find stability. And Milan have taken a lot of punches, and some of them have been definitely self-inflicted. But still, I stand by it because I see the reward also definitely outweighing the risk. And I think you need to steady the ship. So I'm in favor of sticking with Pioli for now, for sure. So David, that's my answer. But also, what do you think was the main reason the deal with Ragnić collapsed?
Yeah, and let me tell you, I totally get the stability thing and whatnot. Look, last season, I think, you know, had Gattuso stayed and they didn't bring in Giampaolo, you know, Milan would probably have been closer to a Champions League spot than they were. So I think there was definitely a lesson to be learned there. As far as the reasons why the deal collapsed, I think there was definitely a combination of things. The fact that in the end it came out that Leipzig wanted Ragnić to pay a significant buyout clause to release him out of his contract, that was definitely a factor. I think the fact that the team was playing better under Pioli and was getting good results was definitely another factor as well. I think, too, the way Milan operated on the transfer market in retrospect looked really good recently. I think Maldini and Massara and Boban, when he was still at the club, they really did a lot of things right, and it really came to fruition now. I mean, Rebic has been one of the best players in Serie A since Calcio Big Book came back. We know Theo Hernandez was one of the best new additions in all of the league, Bennacer. So I think, you know, this positive momentum, in addition to Ragnić having to pay have his contract rescinded, were a factor. And then finally, the extremely short turnaround for next season. I mean, look, the season, this 2019-2020 season is going to end fairly soon. And then before you know it, clubs are turning around, getting ready for next season. So I think that really short window, which granted, they knew that was coming regardless. I think all those factors combined made it so that they decided to stick with Pioli. Like, in general, I do agree with the stability and whatnot. I do have, though, a couple of concerns. A, I think, you know, Milan has played really well. I don't want to take anything away from them, but this is really kind of a weird format of the league. I think Pioli deserves a lot of credit for getting his team ready to come back and hit on all cylinders once Calcio returned. Can't say that about all other clubs. You also have to ask yourself, how much does it help Milan's younger players that they're not playing in front of fans, especially at home, which we know at San Siro can be intimidating. The last thing I'll say on this, you stick with Pioli. I definitely can see why you can make a very good case for that. But I think it's imperative that they stick with Ibrahimovic as well, and that they stick with Maldini and Massara, who with him has been running kind of the front office. So I think, you know, they need to continue that stability. I have to say, on one hand, you know, I was really fascinated by the Rognic project. I'm glad that on the podcast we highlighted the Italian media's, you know, reaction to Rognic so far and how that could have played out during the season. And I think especially because Pioli was doing so well, I think Rognic really saw him going to Milan as really not exactly a place where he was set up to succeed, that there was a lot of ways where it could have gone south. And I do think the media is part of that as well, and I'm glad we highlighted this on the podcast.
Well, I do agree. I think Zlatan needs to stay around for Milan's benefit for as long as possible. Hopefully he's into it for as long as possible, because even just having him around could make things turn the right direction with others. And hey, I don't know what Thiago Silva's doing, but if he wants to be there for the reunion and just kind of usher them into the new era, that'd be awesome. But all right, let's talk about one more thing here at the top, which is really quite topical, because Juve, David, they just don't seem to want to clinch this thing. They just seem to want to punt this title away. So it kind of makes you ask, what do you think? I mean, we've had teams in the race. We had Lazio in the race for almost the whole season, and poor Lazio, they really have fallen off, and it's broken my heart. But just in general, like, Juve have showed a lot of vulnerability. So what team or teams do you think will regret the most of not taking advantage of this vulnerability by Juve?
Yeah, look, you know, that game against Udinese was really indefensible, and there's been plenty of games like that for Juve recently. I think that the thing that is going to save Sarri, and I do think he'll come back next season, is again that very short window between the end of this season and the next one. But, you know, as someone who really, really likes Sarri, what really stands out to me is I don't see really much difference between Allegri and Sarri's Juve. The main difference isn't a more offensive, interesting football under Sarri. The main difference is how often Juve gives up leads, which is really kind of shocking, because that's not really the Juve way. So I think this is clearly the weakest Juve out of these nine Scudetti. I think it's inevitable they're going to clinch it probably during someone else's game, because they can't do it on their own terms. But I do think there's a lot of teams that will regret. Like, look, Lazio, I think, had the season not been abruptly ended, you know, in March, they probably had, you know, a good opportunity to win the title. I think Inter is going to look back at all the points they gave up against smaller teams, you know, silly things like Lukaku not taking the penalty against Bologna when they're up 1-0. Like, they had plenty of opportunities. But I know this might sound crazy, but I think the team that's going to maybe regret this the most is Atalanta. And I know a lot of people are going to say, oh, Atalanta already overachieved. Look at their payroll. Look at, you know, how well they played. And I get all that, but you know what? Atalanta really had a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to win the Scudetto. You know, I've been following Calcio for a long time. The most surprising Scudetto of my lifetime was Verona winning it in the 80s. And I always said, to me, that was really the peak of Serie A, them being able to win a title in that Serie A. Everything went their way. And I think, like Atalanta, really this season, everything went their way. You know, they had their older players having, you know, another great season, Ilicic and Papu Gomez. Duvan Zapata was injured. Luis Muriel replaced him perfectly. They had done a lot of things well with depth. But really, this, if there was ever an opportunity for Atalanta to have a Hellas Verona-like title, it was this season. And I know some people have pointed out that Juve is probably going to be not very strong next season. Probably, but they are getting Kulusevski and Arthur. They are going to look maybe better than people realize. I think the other teams are going to be on the rise. I think Inter and Napoli, and we're going to get to the Napoli on the transfer market in a second. So it's maybe not fair to say because Atalanta had really a dream season, but when I look at the regrets, they really had a chance to have a Hellas Verona like title here. So yeah, not so great by Juve. Let's see what happens over the weekend. I definitely want to, you know, recap Juve's season with a guest, but we also need to get to Inter and Atalanta, so we'll focus on them next week a little bit more. So, Alex, let's get to some hot transfer topics. I know especially the first one is going to be dear and dear to your heart, so I wanted to recap three big storylines with transfers, so let's get to them, Alex. Which was the first one?
All right, yeah, the first one I'm hyped about, really hyped about, because so many people over the years of doing Couchland have asked, when is Alex going to give his fandom, not his true fandom, folks, we know I'm Chelsea all the way, but when is he going to really have a dog in the fight in Serie A? We might be close, David. So let me ask this. What are the odds Napoli land Jeremy Boga in addition to Victor Osimhen?
Yeah, so, you know, and the other big question, you know, is Napoli going to have to make a big sale to afford all this? And I know there's been buzz with Koulibaly, but look, Napoli this week received some very good news because Parma officially avoided relegation. And once they mathematically did that, they owed Napoli a lot of money. So that salvation for Parma triggered the options to buy Roberto Inglese for 18 million, no less. Grassi, who was a midfielder Napoli had acquired from Atalanta a few years ago, one of the first Gasperini fool's gold, if you will, for 7 million. Goalkeeper Sepe for 5 million. I think Sepe for 5 million is good value for Parma. I always say when you look at multiple deals between clubs, don't look at them individually, look at the sum of their parts. So basically, Parma gets for 30 million Inglese, Grassi, Sepe. Good deal for Napoli, if you ask me. Although Sepe, 5 million, good valuation. So right there, that's already a nice chunk of change. In addition to that, there are some other options to buy becoming due. Verdi, who's been a total bust at Torino, 20 million. Marco Raj, Cagliari, 13 million. And Chiriche, Sassuolo, 11 million. So right there, that's the Osimhen money right there. Almost all of these are like pure plusvalenza. We know Napoli amortizes more in early years. They have these players multiple years. This is almost all plusvalenza. So right there, you have almost the Osimhen money right there without having to sell Koulibaly or anyone big. We know Allan is definitely on his way out. There are some other. Milik is almost certainly on his way out. And that's how you can get to the Jeremy Boga money. In addition, you know, as I mentioned, Chiriches to Sassuolo, 11 million. Sassuolo owes Boga. And the development is Boga told Sassuolo that he wants to be sold this summer. That as much as he appreciates how much Sassuolo has developed him, he doesn't want to stay there another year. I got to be honest, I kind of agree with his decision. I think he absolutely did everything he needed to prove at Sassuolo he is ready for another team. So Napoli are willing to offer cash plus Ounas, who's a player that that Sassuolo appreciates. So let's see if that deal goes through. Sassuolo would like 40 million for Boga's total valuation. So let's see if that goes through. But Napoli definitely put themselves, as we talked about, their big demands for Koulibaly, they have set themselves in a really good position to make these deals. And I apologize, it wasn't Ounas, it's Eunice who'd be part of the deal to Sassuolo. So, Alex, I do think, I know you've had some sympathy for Napoli. You liked Insigne for a while. Yep. I think Osimhen is all but done. Boga could be coming. And man, that's going to be really a nice, exciting team for Napoli.
Yeah. And I do like Irving Chucky Lozano to the extent of, I followed them a little bit at PSV. I didn't like him enough to really watch him this past season, and I know it hasn't necessarily gone the way people had hoped, but I still rate him. Like, I still think his year two could be pretty good. But it also excites me because I know Lozano plays on the right wing a lot. Like, he played there a lot for PSV. So he's a real right winger. Osimhen, I imagine, as a striker. And Boga as a left winger. I mean, if that clicks. And Boga, you should be... Boga would be a big one for Napoli because he's one of those in-league guys. You already have seen that he can play well in-league. Like, he is Serie A tested to an extent. So that one's a big one. I think he... If Boga goes to Napoli, I'll be honest, as much as I entertained it from a Chelsea perspective, that is exactly the right career move for him, in my opinion, because he's staying in league, but he's going to a team where he's even more on the map, and a team where, I'm not saying he's the same player as Lorenzo Insigne, they're both very small, but I think they can play the left wing, you know, just as easy as each other. So I think that would be a great move, and Osimhen, I think, really highly of. So even Boga and Osimhen get me excited. But I'm not throwing my hat in yet with Napoli, but I'm intrigued. I'm very intrigued. I'm down to root for Napoli if they make it worth it. All right. So, David, let's move on to this second hot transfer topic. How much will Milan's transfer strategy change now that Pioli is staying?
So the first thing that's going to be interesting is, you know, it was reported that Milan had told Rangnick that he'd have a transfer budget of around 75 million. And then if they made some big sales, they might give him a little bit more. So I'm curious if that stands for Pioli or if this was, you know, part of the reason they kept Pioli is they decided they don't want to invest so much. And look, I think we're going to see more moves like redeeming Chiar. You know, it wasn't supposedly Rangnick wasn't too happy about Milan keeping Chiar. Seems hard to believe. I mean, granted, it was a very cheap move. He had played well. I know they wanted a youth movement, but having a veteran that had done well seems a little bit odd that they wouldn't go for that. But I think long and short of it, you will see maybe more veterans than you would have under Rangnick. We know Maldini believes in having some veterans there. I think there's going to be more reliance on the Raiola clients. We know Donnarumma's up for an extension. I definitely think he'll sign it. Romagnoli could sign an extension as well. I think the odds of Ibrahimovic staying go up significantly. I wonder if this also means that Bonaventura is going to sign an extension to stay maybe for an extra year as well. I think Milan's going to want to continue to keep Rebic. They met with Ramadani, his agent, to try to anticipate they can redeem him next year at the end of the two-year loan. Doesn't sound like Jovic is available on loan, so they'll probably have to look elsewhere for a young striker. I still think right back is a top priority, and maybe Dumfries from the Dutch league, who Raiola could work as an intermediary, could be an option there as well. And then I think there'll be another midfielder. I still think Tonali would still be an objective for Milan. He would slot really well with what they have. We know Bakayoko would like to come back to Milan. So maybe one out of those two, a right back and a young striker. I think those are the priorities. But I definitely think the more of the veteran players that are currently on the club could end up staying more than had Rangnick arrived.
Okay. All right, David, well, here's a player with a little bit of buzz. Well, actually, a lot of buzz, and he really is a player that I like, but I don't need a Chelsea. Do you think Zaniolo will be sold this summer?
And man, what a goal he scored recently. Filthy. Our friend Napoli Outsider is enamored with Zaniolo. Hard not to be. I still think odds are he stays at Roma for a couple of reasons. I mean, the sale of the club is still ongoing. I think, you know, selling Zaniolo before the new owner comes on board, I don't know. I feel like the new owner has to at least be able to decide what to do with Zaniolo. I also think with the Euro coming next season, I think it makes a lot of sense for him to stay there. We talked about the short turnaround between this season and next. So I still think it's more likely than not he stays at Roma. You know, he's been linked to Spurs, been linked to Juve. There's been some buzz about Inter, who have a 15% buy, you know, future resale on him. So maybe it's attractive for him to go. But I still think more than anything, it's likely he stays at Roma one more season and then goes. Real fast, I also wanted to comment on Juric's decision to stay at Verona. He had been linked to both Fiorentina and Torino, ends up signing a long extension with Verona. Look, he's been terrific. He's in the running for manager of the year after Gasperini, in my opinion. But I think this is a mistake. It's like Boga. I don't really see what he has to gain staying one more year at Sassuolo. To me, even if Juric repeats this excellent season at Verona, and odds are he won't because they are selling some of his key players, I just don't see how much better his brand it would be than what it is now. So I think to me, he had more to lose than to gain by staying at Verona. At the same time, he's very comfortable there. Verona did say they're going to try to replace well the players that went, but I still think it would have been maybe wiser to, you know, strike while the iron is hot now. So before we get to the patron part of our podcast, we have our dear friend, Thousand Names, send me some game picks for 3 games this weekend. So let's get at it. Milan hosting Atalanta. Thousand Names has Milan winning 3-2. Brace by Rebic, goal by Cassi, goal de Lex by Cassi, and Muriel with a brace. He says Pioli is going to destroy Gasperini with his calcio champagne. He says Ibrahimovic is going to dominate once again against opponents that belong in Lega Pro, Italy's third division. And he says that Atalanta owner Percassi is ridiculous. In Italian, Milan-Atalanta 3-2, Rebic doppietta, Cassi, Muriel doppietta, Pioli asfalta anche il gas col suo calcio champagne, Ibra domina anche contro avversari da Lega Pro, Percassi ridicolo. I'm going to disagree. Atalanta, I know, has been maybe a little bit less brilliant than usual. Iličić is out, but I'm going to go 1-1, and I'll give Rebic and Muriel goals here. Next up, Juve hosting Sampdoria. Thousand has Juve winning 2-0 with a brace by Ronaldo. He said Sarri is going to win a Scudetto that nobody cares about, and that the moral winner of all this is Conte, but that Ranieri is very sad to see Juve winning the title. In Italian, Juve Samp 2-0, Ronaldo doppietta, Sarri vince un Scudetto di cartone di cui non interessa nessuno. Vincitore morale Conte, Ranieri tristissimo. Yeah, I agree. I'm going to have Juve winning. I'll have it 1-0 with a goal by Ronaldo. I'll agree there. Next up, Genoa hosting Inter. Thousand has 0-0. He says Marotta is going to gift a point in the race to avoid relegation to Preziosi in exchange for redeeming Pinamonti. He says these are the usual tricks that are typical of Italian football. And he says Eriksen and Skriniar are going to put on the show. In Italian, Genoa-Inter 0-0. Marotta regala un punto salvezza prezioso in cambio del riscatto di Pinamonti. Soliti imbrogli tipici del calcio italiano. Eriksen and Skriniar danno spettacolo. I'm going to agree on the draw, but I'm not going to have a nefarious reason like Thousand, but I'm going to agree with a 0-0. So before we get to Pete Aquaviva, which will be available to all, let's get to Patreon part of the podcast. As I mentioned, we are going to be moving more and more stuff to Patreon. We will keep always one episode a week, free to all, but we are moving more stuff to Patreon. We had part 2 of our chat with Napoli Outsider, exclusive to patrons as well, some awesome articles. So if you do enjoy Calcioland, consider becoming a patron. You'll get a lot of extra content, you'll get all your questions answered, and you'll also support a great charity in Italy. Okay, so very excited to welcome our next guest, my good friend Pete Aquaviva, who we've had on a few times before on the pod. So as I was trying to figure out who we were going to talk to about Milan's decision to not go with Rangnick and actually extend Pioli's contract, could have gone in a lot of different directions. But the reason I wanted to bring Pete on to talk about this is Pete's kind of a little bit of a philosopher. We're actually having a very interesting conversation before we started recording, so I know he'll have an interesting perspective on this. So, Pete, always a pleasure to chat with you. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Always a pleasure. I love talking on this show. Let's do it.
All right, my friend. So what I figured we'd do is talk about this in layers. So let's just start with this. You know, we've heard for months that the plan was to bring in Ragnik. We heard about his great ability to discover talents, turn clubs around, create a culture, and whatnot. So for months, we heard about this, him coming to Milan. So let me ask you, as someone who follows the team closely, how intrigued were you by the idea of Ragnik coming over and really taking over everything, transfers, coaching, the medical staff? What was your impression of this idea? Did this sound like a good plan to you?
I was fascinated. I was absolutely fascinated by this idea. So most clubs are kind of decentralizing. You don't really see look at the Premier League, for example. There aren't many managers that are also in the U.S. We call them GMs. You're sporting directors. They don't really roll those into one very often. But here is an idea where Rangnick is like, okay, I want everything. I'm going to coach the team. I'm going to build the team. This way I have control. We're going to do it my way. And that's an interesting idea to me. In general, do I like that idea? I don't love it, but this guy's kind of done it before. He did it with Schalke. He did it with Leipzig. He's doing it with all of these different teams. A lot of people will argue, and this is kind of the tricky part on here. How do you assign credit to people? So was it him that did this? Was it the people that he hired that did this? Maybe he left and then people succeeded after him. Does he get credit for developing them, or does he not get credit because they didn't break out until then? So all of this is, you know, it's tied up. You're not really going to get an answer. There's no, you know, it's not like you hire Mourinho, you win the treble. It's Mourinho. You can look at it and point to it like that. This is a little bit more complex, and it's really kind of a chess game. So this idea really intrigued me. Milan has had year zero for how many years now? 2011, 2012?
Yeah.
Right? So this guy is saying, okay, let's actually do that. Let's do it for real. Milan never had anybody who knew how to do this. Silvio's idea of a youth project was a way to save money. Then when you brought in Yong Hong Lee, their idea of a youth project was to throw 150 million against the wall and see what stuck. You had a few things that stuck, but by and large, it was a colossal waste of money for a lot of people in Čukalović. So this idea of like, let's use the same idea we've had before, build from the youth, kind of start over, except let's get somebody that actually can do it. That's very intriguing to me.
Yeah, no, well said. And I have to say, too, I was very, very intrigued to see how all this was going to play out on numerous levels. So now let's shift gears. Let's talk before we get into the decision of Milan sticking with Pioli, and I definitely want to get to that. Let's just talk about his tenure as a whole. So obviously, I think it's safe to say since Calcio came back after the pandemic, Milan's been as good as any team. They took out, after Atalanta, I think you can make the case they've been the best team. But how much credit do you give Pioli for this turnaround? And how much do you think Ibrahimovic, who also certainly has had an impact on the younger players, how much credit does he have? So when you look at them, like, how do you break this down? And who do you think is more responsible between the two?
So this is it's an interesting question because these two people kind of do the same thing. Their best quality about them is their leadership. That's what people have described as Pioli. They said he has clear ideas. He lets it be known what they want. Ibrahimovic kind of seems to do the same thing, except on a little bit more of a motivational level. But let's start with Pioli, because so he didn't just get hired right during the pandemic.
Yeah.
He was hired a long time ago. 7 matches were how long Gianpaolo got. He went had 3 wins and 4 losses in that. Actually, Pioli, picking up after him, started out worse. He had, I'm pretty sure about this, he had 2 wins and not 3 wins in his first 7 matches. He garnered 1 less point as well. I think it was 8-9 overall. So he didn't start great. And then he was okay. When we went into the pandemic, Milan were kind of sitting pretty. They're mid-table. They didn't have too many prospects one way or another. And honestly, at that point, Boban had already been fired. So we really had an idea of where Milan intended to go. Like, Rangnick was really the idea. This is where it seems like they're going. And that kind of took the pressure off Pioli. He started performing a little bit better. Of his last 10 matches, he's undefeated, 3 draws, 7 wins. They've beaten most of the best teams in Italy. To be perfectly honest, they were absolutely dominant against Juve on a level that I haven't seen Milan beat Juve since, Allegri? And even then, like, yeah. those were contested. Those weren't dominating. This was like, Juventus got blown out with 4 straight goals after a 2-goal lead. I've never seen that kind of turnaround. So, kind of like we mentioned on the last question, how do you assign credit? It's tough because we had 2 new variables. You've got Pioli with more time. He has this entire break off to come up with new ideas, to figure out how to use his team, to develop a new module, a formation. Ibrahimovic is there. He's really starting to have an impact on the team, even beyond goals. He scored against Bologna recently. I think he put up a double just in his last match. He's doing well, but he's 38 years old and he's a striker. And he's not very mobile and he doesn't track back. And he only goes for the ball when he knows he's going to win it. That's fine. There's a role for that, especially when you have 5 substitutions. Somebody like Ibrahimovic actually becomes even more valuable to me.
Yeah.
Because this is the kind of specialty player that you can just bring in at the end of the game. He's not somebody you need to worry about using a bench spot, especially if you get 5 subs. Well, of course, there's going to be a situation in which you need to bring him in. So how much credit does Pioli get for it? Well, he's the manager. It's kind of like, if you're the manager of a restaurant that turns itself around, of course, you kind of look to the people in charge and say, like, well, you guys did this. The problem that I have here is this is almost assuredly the best stretch of Pioli's career. I think it's safe to say that it will go down at the end of, once he retires, this is going to be his best run of games. I think, if I'm not mistaken, he guided Lazio to third. He had yep. Inter. He had Inter doing really well for a while, and then both of those teams fell off. This happens with a whole lot of coaches. They have a brief bounce back period. They do really well. You get a nice run of results. You get a nice contract, and then it kind of goes down from there. It's the same thinking if you look at the NFL, the NBA, these other sports leagues. When a player is in a contract year, they play their ass off, and then once they get their deal, they're a little bit more relaxed. They're a little bit more fire isn't there. The fire isn't there. So how do you attribute credit on this? Pioli has to be given credit. But to me, I understand that you got to look at what did you do, but you also have to look at what are you going to do? Where is the future of this team that Pioli is going to develop? Where is the room for growth? Because this team does need more growth. They're good. They're not great. They're pretty fairly placed in the table. I want to say they're 5th as of our recording right now. Maybe 6th. That's about right. That's kind of where they should be. If you get rid of the Giampaolo time, if you give him a little bit less of a runway, they're in the top 4. That's about what I'd expect from him. But I don't know if that's enough to give him a 2-year deal. I don't know if that's enough to call off a youth project. They think about this another way. They were willing to – they used the entire winter market to trim the budget. They were willing to prepare this summer so that Rangnick could do what he wanted to do in his transfers. And then Pioli won 7 games out of 10, and they decided, actually, we don't need a total revolution. Hang on. How are we going to go from we need total revolution to actually we won 7 out of 10, we're good? It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, so now let's get to that. So obviously, as I mentioned at the top, we had heard Rangnick for months and whatnot. And then it turns out Pioli said that they offered him the full-time job Monday night, quickly accepted, and here we are. So let me ask you, what do you make of this decision? It kind of came a little bit out of the blue. I mean, we did have some hints. First, there was the story that Rangnick's club wanted him to pay him off to rescind his contract. Then there was this momentum on Pioli, but then the decision happened really quickly, and yesterday the announcement of Pioli's extension. So what do you make of this decision? Are you happy with it? Are you more concerned about Milan, less concerned with Milan because of it?
I think you got positives and you got negatives here. The positive is you're going to retain Maldini. Maldini has done a really good job. He has brought in talented players. I'm looking at Bennacer. I'm looking at Theo Hernandez. He brought in Leao. And again, you could argue, is this him or is this Boban? Well, you could say it's the team. It's Massara. It's Boban. It's him. All three of these guys together. They did this kind of scouting. They did a good job. Those players are coming into fruition. I think there should be some sort of reward for that. It would leave a real, real bitter taste in my mouth if they were to get rid of possibly Milan's greatest. I can't really say it. Possibly Milan's most important player, most important persona that's still alive. I mean, Baresi maybe, but Maldini and Baresi, they are the cream of the crop. You're going to get rid of one of your ultimate legends so that a director of sport can have two roles and also coach. That seems a little bit crazy to me. But at the same time, on the other end, it seems a little bit crazy to me that we are saying Pioli has done really well these last 10 matches. Let's give him two more years. Sure, he's organized the team. Sure, he's fixed the midfield to a certain extent. But what's the path forward? How does this develop? Where does this go from here? I understand you have to reward past behavior. And if you were to essentially say, so Gazidis gave him a contract, Pioli, and in that contract, there was a clause that it was a one-year deal. If he made fourth place, it became a two-year deal. He didn't get fourth place. He's not going to get it. And yet he got extended. So you could look at this a couple of ways. One way is, well, he did good work. It was in the spirit of the agreement that if you do well, we will retain you. But at the same time, we said if you get fourth and you didn't get fourth, but we're still going to retain you. So I guess what I'm – to me, you're – retaining Maldini is very important. I don't think there's a way to retain Maldini with Rangnick. I just don't – I don't think those two can really make it work. And that seemed to be kind of what some of the press reports were saying. That's certainly why Boban left, was he was like, this is somebody coming to literally do my job. I need to leave. And Pioli is, look, he needs to be credited with what he did. He has done good work. He has advanced Milan. He has put them, God, they were so far behind, but he has moved them up a little bit on the tier list. They're a better team than they were when he started. Not many managers in Milan's history you could say that to over the last couple of years. I'd say Gattuso is really the only one that kind of left the team better than when he found it. So again, Pioli's done well. But I don't like this idea of, well, let's give him two more years from now. You're already paying, I want to say, another 3 to 4 years of Giampaolo, which you're probably going to have to pay a lot of that. Nobody's coming for this guy right now. It's going to have to be pretty desperate next season in order for somebody to really want to bring him in. Too bad Palermo's not here. He would do great on that carousel. So I think you're making a right move in the directorial sense to make a wrong move in the coaching sense. And that's a little bit of why this whole idea of having one guy do both is a bit problematic.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think you covered both sides pretty well. So you mentioned already a few players that have come in under the current regime that have done well. Let me ask you in general, when you look at Milan's squad, which players do you see as future long-term building blocks under Pioli, at least for the foreseeable future?
So the obvious ones are going to be Donnarumma and Romagnoli. They were there before. They'll be there after him. Those are the two most important blocks. But I really see Bennacer as somebody who is going to be a building block on this team. I've always been a Kessié fan. I know a lot of people complain about a variety of things with Kessié, and some of them valid, most of them not, to be honest. This is a guy that's still multiple years from his prime, and he is a beast. When you think about the modern midfielder and the amount of ground they need to cover and the amount of work they need to do, he does it. He does it well. He makes it so Bennacer is a super slow player. He is like Pirlo level of speed. And yet somehow we never talk about it because Kessié covers all of this ground. They play in a double pivot. And yet, honestly, neither of them is a good passer, which kind of, you know, I know you're not asking me this, but Milan needs to be going very hard for Tonali. This is the third piece that would fit into those two. He needs to be on this team. This would be a catastrophic mistake if they let him go to another side. But yeah, so to me, that midfield pivot, both of those guys, very important. And I know last time we talked, we had a Paquetá versus Leao segment. I think Leao won that segment, and it looks like he's kind of going to be the man going forward. Paquetá is kind of out of form. Couple of matches, and Leao seems to be the replacement to Ibrahimovic, at least with the current squad that they have. So, again, so kind of like one player at each position. Theo Hernández is wonderful. Sure, he should be a building block. But if somebody comes along and says, here's $55 million, do you want to keep this player? Absolutely not. Sell him right away. Take that profit, invest it somewhere else. This team isn't close enough to a finished product that a wing back should be something that we're holding on to that desperately. Would I like him to stay on the team and be a building block? Sure. But if you need to make money to do other things, he's a perfect guy to let go. That being said, I wouldn't do it yet, but I got an eye on him in the future.
Awesome. So you already mentioned Tonali, and I agree. He's been really well with those two in the midfield. What are the other pressing positions or players you'd like to see added to the current team?
I think they need a right winger. They brought in Salamakers on loan from, he's in the Belgian league. If he wasn't in the Belgian league, it's the Dutch league. Apologize on that. He's been okay. He's been serviceable. He scored his first goal in the Bologna game, but I see him as a replacement level guy. This is going to sound a little bit crazy. I don't think Milan have had a better player in attack over the last decade other than Menez. Menez was kind of a beast in retrospect. That's the kind of guy I think they need to get. They kind of flirted with the idea when they brought in somebody like Deulofeu for a little while.
Yeah.
They need a winger that can kind of dominate, for lack of a better word. Juve is doing a similar idea. Douglas Costa is that same idea. Bernadeschi is that same idea. Obviously, they didn't quite work out, but that concept of a player of that type, that is something that Milan is missing. I like Leao as a center forward there, but he also is somebody you can push out on the wing. So this becomes one of those things. They need another piece in the attack. Maybe you bring in a better striker and then you push Leao out to the flank. Okay, I like that. Rebic and Leao flanking a striker, that's good. Maybe Leao is your striker and you get another fast winger. Then the front three there are extremely quick. Basically, the attack is missing a piece. And I don't know what the solution is to it, but I know the archetype of a player that they should be looking at there. Midfield-wise, 100%, it's Tonali. It's not even a debate. This is the guy that it needs to be. And then in defense, I would love to see another partner for Romagnoli. Shire has been really good. We need to go ahead and praise
that
him.
That has been really
very
good.
I saw a stat where like they've only lost once when he's in the lineup and they lose just about every time he's not. Great. He cost $3.5 million. They just redeemed him. That's wonderful. That's a great depth signing. But wouldn't it be nice if you didn't have to rely on him to be a starting center back now, or at least if you could get somebody else to kind of pair with him? Milan's attempts at finding this player, whether it's Duarte from Brazil, whether it is Musacchio from Villarreal a few years back, they can't really get the right guy to pair with Romagnoli. I like the Shire is the partner for now, but he is a tree. He is slow. So I'd like to see another faster center back, but again, that's an expensive position. The positions that Milan need to invest in aren't the cheap ones, which is kind of the irony here. They're going to need this money to spend. So you're going to need to generate it either from player sales. Maybe it's going to be contraction of the overall cost of the squad. That's what the January window was about for them. But they're going to need to generate some money to kind of get these bonus players. The players that can really put you over the top. Somebody that can kind of win a match on their own, that can save a goal on their own. These players are expensive. And so that's part of why Rangnick's I like that, because it's like, well, if we can't afford to buy them, which we cannot, we got to develop them. This guy seems to have an eye for talent. This guy seems to be able to build those squads. I recently had somebody ask me why Milan aren't attracting a type of coach like a Klopp, like a Guardiola. And it's like, well, because that's a tier five coach. Milan is a tier two team. You need to get somebody that's going to bring you from tier two to tier four before that's even in the discussion. And to me, Pioli is not the guy who brings you from two to four. Maybe he brings you two to three, but then eventually he's going to drop back down to two. He doesn't have a defined enough identity. He doesn't have a consistent enough record of results that this is going to be somebody that's really going to elevate this squad overall. Is he going to turn them from kind of the laughing stock that they have been into something reasonable? Yes, and that's good. But hasn't he already done that? Isn't it mission accomplished there? What is his next step? So in order to really get to this next tier, you're going to need to either develop these players, scout them young, or splash a little bit of cash. And Milan don't have the option to splash the cash right now. I'm not quite sure what their actual plan is to fill these holes.
Okay, Pete. So great analysis. I'm just going to put you on the spot before I let you go and ask you this question. What is more likely, in your opinion, that next season Pioli leads Milan back to a Champions League spot, or is it more likely that Pioli is sacked by Christmas?
So did you put this out as a poll earlier in the week?
Yeah, I did. But I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah, I voted that he would be more likely to be sacked by Christmas.
Have you changed your mind since you answered?
A little bit. Yeah, I kind of have. He needs to get fourth place. I think he can do that. Again, a lot of it's going to depend on the window, how serious they are about this team, how serious they are about this project. If you were willing to throw the baby out with the bathwater and say, hey, let's start over, let's bring in a German coach, let's bring in a German director, let's like totally change up the way we do things, and then after 7 wins and 3 draws go, actually, nah. Well, it kind of like what's the other plan? So are they still going to pursue the same targets? Are they not? Are they going to look at the same profiles of players? Milan has a very wide open path of where to go next. And without any indications of where they're leaning, what's important to them, you know, is keeping the wage bill down important? In general, it seems to be. Is getting them back into the Champions League so that they can have that additional revenue the most important? Is winning the Europa League? Because, I don't know, Elliot seems to do real weird things with this team. Maybe they care about a trophy like that so then they can cash out. Without the knowledge of what the long-term plan is until you build the stadium in 2024, how are you going to bridge the gap between you and these clubs that have now double, triple your revenue? Without that plan, it's hard to know whether fourth is even a reasonable expectation. If they don't reinforce this squad very much, Pioli's going to have to manage just about as well as he has for these last couple of games just to get them to fourth. I don't know if he's going to be able to do that. But at the same time, if you're going to give him 2 years right now, so he's going to have 2 full more seasons, you're going to fire him in December. It would have to be catastrophic for them to go ahead and do this again and again and again. This is Groundhog Day. I feel like every day we wake up and we have sacked a new Milan manager, which is part of why, and I know this isn't quite what you asked, but this is part of why a lot of people were skeptical of Milan bringing in Rangnick again, because they were like, every season it's a new manager. It's the same thing over and over and over. We want continuity. We want continuity. But continuity only goes so far. Like, how far it goes is really going to be the question. Is this going to be enough to elevate this team? Is this going to be enough to motivate Elliot to spend intelligently? Did Boban do more work than we think? What if this is all Boban and Massara and Maldini are kind of just, you know, a little bit to the side? I know Boban really wanted to take credit on Theo Hernandez, and Boban was also the one pushing on a couple of other players here. What if he's the one doing this? And then we got rid of him just so that they could announce Rangnick, or not announce, so that they could sign a pre-contract that wasn't really a pre-contract because they're still willing to go back on it. I also don't understand why they signed a pre-contract if they were going to go back on this, but that's a whole nother question. to get back to it, I think it's more likely that they can make fourth place than it is that he gets fired. I think if he gets fired, it's going to be in the spring once they're mathematically eliminated.
Okay. Well, Pete, I can't thank you enough. You definitely brought us a philosophical perspective to this. Keep up the great work. Always a pleasure to chat with you. And thank you so much for hopping on Couch of Land today.
Ciao, David. Love speaking with you.